This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Chronic fatigue syndrome. It was first described in the early 1980s, and it affects an estimated 2.5 million Americans. But for many years, doctors' tests couldn't find an explanation for the symptoms of inexplicable tiredness and often pain. And those symptoms were often written off as figments of patients' imaginations. But that's changing. My next guest recently wrote about advances in understanding chronic fatigue syndrome in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Anthony Komaroff is a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, a senior physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, and editor-in-chief of Harvard Health Letter. Anthony, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thank you, Heather. Great to be here.
I should start by saying that, in fact, chronic fatigue syndrome has actually gotten an updated name as well. Can you just kind of tell us what this syndrome is, what is considered chronic fatigue syndrome at this point by the medical community?
The illness is defined by a series of symptoms. Fatigue is a prominent symptom. Pain, as you said. A tendency after physical exertion or cognitive exertion to have a relapse of the fatigue and the pain and the other symptoms. Often not immediately, but the next day. Something called orthostatic intolerance, which basically means the blood pressure is not being properly controlled by the brain. And as a result, people often feel faint or even do faint after they've been up on their feet a period of time. So there are a group of symptoms together. They must have been present at least 6 months, and in most of the people that I've seen in my practice and that others have seen, they've been ill for many years.
And you write in the Journal of the American Medical Association that over the past 35 years, thousands of studies from laboratories in many countries have documented underlying biological abnormalities in patients with chronic fatigue syndrome compared to healthy peers of the same age. So what are some of those? Because for a long time, that was kind of the crux of the issue, was doctors saying, we've tested everything we can test and we don't find anything wrong. What do we now know is wrong for some of these patients, at least?
Right. And you're right. Initially, a lot of doctors, myself included, would do the usual laboratory tests that are done to screen for some evidence that there's something wrong in the body. And the usual tests didn't show anything. But that was 35 years ago. Over the last 35 years, there have been over 9,000 scientific publications, as you say, that compare people with the illness to healthy people of the same age and sex, and that find a whole variety of abnormalities. The first involve the brain. The autonomic nervous system leads out of the brain and spreads throughout the body and controls vital functions like the blood pressure, the heart rate, digestion, etc. And that also is abnormal in when it's tested in various ways.
And then there are also changes in metabolism and also in the immune system, correct?
Right. Metabolism, particularly energy metabolism. That is, we get our energy because the cells of our body are able to make energy, and they need to do that in order to function, in order for us to function. And the ability of the cells of our body and people with this illness to make energy and to use energy to do the things that the cells need to do seems to be compromised in a wide variety of ways. The immune system, as you say, is also abnormal. Particularly, if there were one sort of simple thing to say about it, the immune system is like in a state of being chronically activated. It's as if the immune system were going to war against something, but what that something is hasn't been determined, and it might, in fact, be different from one person to the next. There also, recently, in the last 5 years, have been changes found in the bacteria in the gut.
Anthony Komaroff, you've listed a whole bunch of different things here, you know, changes in the brain, changes in the immune system, in the metabolism, even in the bacteria in our gut. Is there at this point any unifying theory or idea of what is going on? Maybe what is the initial trigger, whether chronic fatigue syndrome starts in one place and spreads to all of those? How do you tie all of these different changes together?
Heather, you're right to say that's the big question. These things must be tied together somehow. What ties them together? What explains ultimately the symptoms of the illness? Here's a theory that I think many of us find increasingly supported by scientific studies, although it's not yet proven. There is probably in every patient with this illness a final common pathway that gets triggered in the brain, that leads the brain to experience the symptoms of the illness. What triggers that final common pathway? It appears that in many people, perhaps most, inflammation somewhere in the body, either directly in the brain itself or elsewhere in the body, that sends signals to the brain, leads the brain's immune system to get activated. And in the course of that activation, the immune system in the brain makes chemicals that lead to the symptoms of the illness. So if we had a way, for example, if we had a treatment that could quiet down the activated immune system in the brain, that could be a fundamental treatment, even a curative treatment, and there are people working on that. But right now, the treatments that are used are treatments to deal with the symptoms of the illness rather than to get at the heart of the illness.
Anthony Komaroff, as a physician, someone who you've said has encountered and treated patients with chronic fatigue syndrome, it seems that at the heart of this issue, at least for a long time, was the fact that doctors took the attitude that if they couldn't see what was wrong, literally, or, you know, see it in the sense of a blood test that came back outside of the normal range, then they kind of dismissed it. I mean, if you had to diagnose the problem in the medical system as opposed to just diagnosing chronic fatigue syndrome, what was going wrong there, and has that been corrected?
Yeah, well, it's an important question. You know, when a patient walks into a doctor's office, what the patient expects, what the doctor expects, is that the doctor will be able to make a diagnosis of what's wrong, and based on that diagnosis, pick the right treatment to fix the problem. That's what's expected. But when a patient walks into a doctor's office with symptoms that the doctor doesn't understand, and the doctor orders a few tests, and none of them come back abnormal, then there's a problem. And I am afraid that some doctors respond to that problem by saying, well, I've got a problem if I can't make the diagnosis. Now, I don't like to have a problem, so let's make it the patient's problem. Let's say that the patient really doesn't have the symptoms that they say they have and that they really don't have anything measurably wrong in their body. And therefore, I couldn't be expected to fix it because it doesn't really exist. I think that psychological reaction on the part of some doctors, and not a very healthy reaction, did characterize, and still does, but less often, the way some doctors respond. Many doctors still don't know that there are over 9,000 studies in the published scientific literature that show that there is something wrong in the body, and they order their usual tests. The usual tests come back normal, and they say there's nothing wrong. That does not happen, fortunately, today as often as it did 30 years ago, but it still happens, and when it does, it's really not fair to the patients.
On the bright side, the National Institutes of Health have expanded research efforts and funding for chronic fatigue syndrome research. Where are those resources and that effort going right now?
Well, the National Institutes of Health really supports research in two ways. They do research on their own campus in Bethesda, Maryland, outside of Washington, and they have launched a very large study of patients with this illness. But most of what the National Institutes of Health does is provide financial support to four centers really around the country, and individual grants to individual scientists around the country. And that number has about doubled in the last 2 to 3 years. So there is increasing interest and support from the National Institutes of Health to try to figure out this illness.
I mean, as we were just talking about, with the slow change and still incomplete change in the medical community's attitude toward chronic fatigue syndrome, the additional research and funding from the National Institutes of Health would seem to suggest an attitude change. Do you think there are broader lessons that both the research and medical community can learn from so far 35 years of misunderstanding and increasing understanding of chronic fatigue syndrome?
There's something every medical student is taught in medical school, which is a statement, an aphorism by a Boston physician in the early 20th century, which is, listen to the patient. The patient is telling you the diagnosis. And we all nod our heads and then we go about our business, and sometimes we forget that sage advice. And my lesson in my experience with this illness is, when patients are telling you that there's something wrong, and they're very credible people, and you're persuaded that they're telling you what they are really experiencing, believe them and try to figure out why they are suffering in that way.
That's Anthony Komaroff of Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Anthony, thank you so much.
You're welcome.